step back to January. In fact, January 12th, to be exact, because that's the day that bulldozers finished clearing tents at the intersection of Massachusetts Avenue and Melnia Cass Boulevard in Boston. And that was in response to a growing housing crisis and an uptick of substance use there.
Well, the city came and they took it away. They demolished it. That's funny. I had a lot of clothing and things like that in there, and it's just all gone.
That's Michael, who only wanted to be called by his first name, talking to WBUR reporter Deborah Becker at the time. The clearing had started that previous fall, when then-acting Boston Mayor Kim Janey declared a public health crisis. And over the course of several months, hundreds of people who called the area home moved or were forced out, their tents removed, like Ron Geddes.
I'm a man that tries to, you know, work hard and do what I'm supposed to do, and I don't want to be here no more than anybody else wants me here. I just don't want to live where they're asking me to. I don't have the money they're asking me for to rent a house or apartment where I grew up all my life. I just can't afford it.
Volunteer city workers like Massachusetts Health Commissioner Monica Burrell helped other residents pack their belongings.
You know, this is a fragile population that we're working with, and things change hour to hour, but people are cooperating. They understand what's happening today. They understand that we're looking for safe alternatives for them. That is the goal.
Some were headed to shelters. For others, like Jason Thompson, the future was unclear.
I'm trying to get into the first thing that's available. Anything that's available, I'm willing to go. I'm willing to give it a try. I'm going back down the street, hopefully. I'm going to sign up again. Hopefully, I could get in a bed tonight somewhere. If not, I'll be back here.
The city has said more than 150 people who were living at the area known as Mass and Cass were relocated to permanent housing. The intersection had become a known open-air drug market, a place for prostitution, and an unsafe area for nearby businesses.
Well, we've had a situation, I'll speak for myself, you know, where, you know, somebody hits my car or is so high to Ken. I mean, they are so not in touch with who they are or where they are, whether that's in the middle of the street or on the sidewalk. They fall over. They're completely out. It's almost like they're unconscious, right? So that's occurring.
That's Catherine D'Amato of the Greater Boston Food Bank, which operates nearby. She was talking to us in September of 2021. But Mass and Cass could also be a place of comfort for those who spent time there.
It is its own community with little sub-communities, because you got to remember there's Puerto Ricans, Dominicans, a couple of people that are Asian. There's a lot of white people and a lot of black people. So it's like all these sub-communities within this little community. It's like a city. It's almost like a city within a city.
That was Cabby, who didn't want to use his real name, talking with WBUR's Deb Becker. And for those, like Alex, who knew someone who did find comfort there.
There was that little bit of relief that, you know what, if he's there, he's safe. And it's not because I wanted him to go through, you know, any kind of pain or anything like that. I just wanted him to be alive.
It's been 7 months since the city took down tents on a wide scale. Now things in that area look eerily familiar.
So right now what you would see is roughly between 125, 175 people every day on the street on Southampton Street. A lot of the people on the street now are new. The people that were put in housing, a lot of them are still in housing or shelter. But out there now are people coming in from all over.
That's Sue Sullivan of the New Market Business Association. She and others continue to work to help those living at Mass and Cass. She and interim Suffolk County District Attorney Kevin Hayden joined us just last week to talk about what we still need to do in the area.
We have to face the reality that we have a public health problem down on Mass and Cass, but we also have a public safety problem as well. Violent crime this year down that area is up by about 9%. Compared to last year. And so that's got to concern everybody.
So last year, before the tents came down, we spoke with Brendan Little about solutions. He is the former policy director for the Mayor's Office of Recovery Services. He served under former Boston Mayor Marty Walsh, but he's also a formerly unhoused person. On Friday, we plan to check back in with Brendan on what's gone on since the area was cleared. But in preparation for that, we wanted to revisit our conversation with him from last year. And when we spoke, we started by asking Brendan Little what people lose, aside from their belongings, when tents are cleared away from Mass and Cass.
I think it's really important to think about why people are on the street and who they're interacting with on a day-to-day basis. Oftentimes, people who are in Mass Cass, they've burnt many bridges in their life, or they've lost loved ones. And the people that are their strongest connection are their fellow peers on the street, and also harm reduction workers, recovery outreach workers, both at the city and nonprofits in the area. And those people are sometimes the lifeline for them, often the lifeline for them to maintain their wellness. So I think that, you know, it's really important that when, you know, enacting any policies that have to do with moving people along, that you maintain those social connections. And it's really hard to do if it's not thought through and if it's not coordinated in a way that offers people dignity and, you know, wellness.
So why? Explain it to us, and maybe you can give us an example. Can people just not get in touch with each other? They can't reach each other anymore? Are they moved away? So illustrate that for us. Why is that so hard to preserve?
It's so hard to preserve because, you know, there's, it's tricky to explain. I think there's, you know, there's so much down there. I think when people drive by, or they, you know, they walk by, or they see pictures on social media or in the media of Mass and Cass, they don't want to look at it because it's too scary, you know, and I get it. It is scary. But as a person who was formerly unhoused, as a person in recovery, what I do get is that when all those other social connections are gone, the people that are on the street, you know, they're your lifeline, and they're the ones that are going, you know, they have your back. They are reversing each other's overdoses. They're looking out for each other with food and clothing. Oftentimes they work jobs, you know, various degrees, either under the table or officially. They're in relationships. So when you lose that setting, you know, that social setting, you break communities apart. So I think what's really important is that you offer people non-congregate, low threshold shelter, like it has been talked about. And this is not a theory, you know, this is not something that is new to Boston. When COVID first hit, this was something that was enacted right away. And you know, you had all these frontline staff who've been dealing with one pandemic, all the epidemic, now they're facing a whole other epidemic on top of that. So, you know, I think it's really important for me to lift up the frontline workers that are doing this work each day, as well as the people who have community and find community in that neighborhood each day.
You know, you come at this from a personal place. And I want to ask you, when did you become homeless, and for how long were you unhoused?
So I first started running away from home when I was 13 years old and 14 years old. I first started sleeping on the street when I was 14 years old. And back then it was, you know, Mass Cass wasn't really the area where people congregated so much. It was Copley Square, it was Newberry Street, the Fenway area in Boston. And to me, you know, what I found there was a group of people who were into punk rock music like I was, people who numbed their pain with drugs and alcohol, but also people that were really caring, people that were really kind, people who were smart. Diverse communities, you know, people from all parts of the city. And then from there, I started getting involved with law enforcement, getting arrested for petty stuff, you know, drinking in public, truancy. That put me on the radar for DCF. Then it was called DSS and then DYS. So those basically the criminal justice system for youth, and the Department of Children and Families. And that kind of led me on a year of being in and out of various institutions. And then from there, got back home for a little while. Then from 16 to 18 years old, I was unhoused again, you know, staying on couches or sometimes staying on the street. And so, yeah, for me, it was really about, even when I got housed eventually as a young adult, I still stayed very close to the people on the street because they were my community, you know, and I would still go out there and hang out and I would miss them. And I know that sounds strange to some people, but it's very common. You know, I met with a young person a few years ago who had housing in Cambridge and he wasn't sleeping in it. He was sleeping on the street because it felt so foreign to him and he didn't have his community. So I just think it's really important to highlight the community, not only of the people on the street, but of the frontline harm reduction and recovery workers who are out there each day, that, you know, don't take breaks, that are out there reversing overdoses, giving people food, warm clothes, and taking care of the people who many people overlook or have forgotten about.
So I want to ask you, you were policy director for the Office of Recovery Services in the Walsh administration. You left in January 2021.
Yes.
Is there something that the Walsh administration was doing that's not happening now? Was there a better job being done then?
I don't know. I think it's difficult to compare. You know, I'm not here to, you know, criticize anybody. I don't know what they're going through. I think the biggest thing that I want to lift up is that, you know, when I was there in January, there weren't, you know, 150 or 200 tents, you know, on the streets. I know that that's really challenging for people, for the harm reduction people, for the people doing the work. It's just, you know, it's a different challenge. It's a different beast. So like, it's kind of like comparing apples and oranges. But the thing I can say is that, you know, we invested heavily with Mayor Walsh, Jen Tracy, Devin Larkin, the team there, Marty Martinez, invested very heavily in an engagement center, which will be open in the next month or so, a brick and mortar engagement center, a street outreach team for the first time, tripling the staff of the PATHS program, which, you know, places people in treatment, expanding harm reduction across the city. So, you know, that's something that I know I've done. But the way I think about it is, you know, I was a policy director, which is a fancy title, but it didn't matter what I was doing if the frontline people on the street, you know, the Sarah Mackins and the Teresas and all the people that I worked with who are the harm reductionists, the tried and true people on the street, if they were telling me, you know, that stuff wasn't working, those were the people I listened to,
Brendan,
because their ear were to the street.
So I'm sure you're aware that the ACLU of Massachusetts is now suing the city over these moves to move people out of tents and temporary shelters. I know during the Walsh administration, Operation Clean Sweep was the summer of 2019, just before the pandemic. Deep criticism of the actions of the Boston Police Department there, where over a two-day period, they arrested dozens of people and cleared out possessions, et cetera. What role should law enforcement have? And did the Walsh administration do the wrong thing with Clean Sweep? Is there any way that law enforcement should be involved in this picture?
I think that law enforcement should be involved to some extent. I think Clean Sweep was deeply traumatic for the people who are on the street, but also for the frontline workers, because it was just, from what I understand, it was a really brash, quick decision based on an altercation with a corrections officer and somebody on the street. So it was very quick. Staff were detained, you know, frontline staff were detained for hours without being told what was going on. So I think that there's a role, and I think that the police street outreach team did some very good work when they were first online. You know, these were officers who directly worked with people, drove them to treatment. You know, some of them were even giving haircuts, you know, really kind of, again, emphasizing this social bond, social connection. I'm not sure if that's happening now, but I think that, you know, there's a role for law enforcement, but I think you can't lead with law enforcement. You know, I've seen harm reduction workers, street outreach workers, you know, keep peace and maintain public safety better than I've seen police who can sometimes agitate situations. I'm not saying that's always the case, but I have seen that happen.
So last question for you, Brendan. Most people listening to this are far, both in terms of distance and lived experience, from what we're talking about here. You're not. What is the most important thing you want people to take away from this conversation?
That there's so many people out there who are doing the work every single day, you know, and they've been doing it for years and years and years since before there was a mass cast moniker that everybody knew, that there are tried and true people out there who are doing the work, taking care of people, and that the area is so stigmatized. But I just want you to know that the people who are there are people. They're so diverse, and they have incredible backgrounds, and they're smart, and they're caring, and the same for the frontline staff. And also, we need to invest both on the front end, which is, you know, low threshold services and harm reduction services to help people who are in active use build trust. And then on the back end, once people are in recovery, we need to give them the economic supports so that they can maintain recovery. Because if there's no reason to get into recovery to have a purpose-driven life, you won't do it. And I think that the front end and the back end are really where we need to invest as a city and a state.
That was Brendan Little. He is the former policy director for the Mayor's Office of Recovery Services, and that was under former Boston Mayor Marty Walsh. He also spent time unhoused. Much of the sound we used today is from the great reporting of WBUR's own Deborah Becker and from interviews here on Radio Boston.